the volume on that. I feel bad. You guys good?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody's ears get hurt?
Mm-mm.
Okay, good. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life and being Instagram. Are we being Instagrammed or panoramicked or whatever?
Pano.
Okay, simplifying the good life here at the Sprocket Podcast, with a show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best life has to offer. We are based out of Portland, Oregon. These are all the things that Aaron would say that I forgot to say. And we talk about bikes and trains and transit and simpler living. Yeah, so here we are. Aaron is not available. He's working right now. So just a quick, like, moment of silence for him. We miss him. And then we're in the room here with Eric Iverson.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming down on the spur of the moment.
Yeah, thank you.
Especially during Pedalpalooza when, like, there are literally 100 other things you could be doing right now.
I have to say I'd rather be here.
Aw. That's so nice. And Krista, so should we clear, is it Skookas? Is that how we say your name?
That is it.
Okay. Good to see you. Thank you also for coming in.
Thank you.
We bumped into you at, guess where we bumped into Krista? Where can you meet cool people, friends that you love? We were at the Beer Mongers.
Admiring the big, long, wooden piece on the ceiling.
That's right,
stick.
Yeah. And you happen to be wearing one of their hats right now. So,
yeah.
We're all drinking beverages, and we are here. We're also joined by Peter Rice.
Yes, you are.
How are you, sir?
I am fantastic.
Thank you for coming in person.
Great to be in Portland again.
I'm glad that you're here. Yeah, and Peter is the author of a brand new book called Spandex Optional Bicycle Touring, which is sitting on the ground right now. And it's one hell of a book. I paged through it yesterday, actually, and gave it the evaluative scan. I did not get to read the whole thing.
No, it's so, quite all right.
I hope you don't take offense at that.
Not at all.
We should clear up.
I haven't
also
even read it myself. I mean, it's got so many words.
Well, you wrote it, so yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
it's got a few pictures, but not enough.
You really want to go through all that again?
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
It's a fantastic book, though. So we're going to talk about that in just a minute. I wanted to say the way that we connected was somewhat awkward. I feel bad about that because Peter, you had sent me an email saying, "Hey." Cold call. I got this book. It seems like something you might like. Let's, you know, maybe we could do a show. And I thought I was forwarding a message to Aaron saying, well, he wants to do a Skype interview, but I don't really like doing Skype interviews because he can't, like, sit down and talk to the person, look at him in the eye and all that stuff. And when I hit send, I realized too late, like 2 seconds too late, that it was not a forward, but it was a reply to you. And so I apologize for any awkwardness that might have caused.
No, none at all.
Fortunately, it turned out that you had other plans that brought you through Portland like 2 weeks after we had emailed each
Absolutely.
Other. So it worked out perfectly. Yeah. So welcome back to Portland. And you're from Albuquerque.
From Albuquerque. Grew up in Olympia. Been going to Portland my whole life. My grandma spent 50 years living near Reed College.
Ah.
So I don't know this place like the back of my hand, but... maybe my left foot or something like that.
There we go. Yeah. It's like something familiar to you that's just kind of a little farther away than your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Eric, what have you been up to?
Well, Chris and I just went on the Pedalpalooza kickoff ride last night, led by Nathan Jones.
Oh, yes.
It was pretty spectacular. I had been on a handful before, but this one started downtown and then just mobbed Burnside, took up all the lanes, same thing on Division, Cesar Chavez, Hawthorne,
galore.
Just really positive,
yeah,
which is cool to see.
You were rolling down Burnside,
yeah, and you know, with certain rides, I feel like there's a threshold when it gets to a certain largeness or circusness. people in cars and everyone is just like, you know, celebratory, waving you, cheering you on. There's, you know, a couple people who might have been upset laying on the horn, but we definitely were past that threshold where it was more like a parade because there was a big structure on a trailer that had a trapeze with a couple of kids on the trapeze doing stuff. And
so
then
it's an actual circus.
Yeah.
Moving down the street, basically.
Yeah. Someone was pulling a tiny house on a trailer. And rumor has it the guy didn't even have brakes, which is
really
pretty awesome. Yeah,
you kind of have to Yeah, that's commitment for one, at least. Yeah, and simpler living.
Maybe that's what they call betting the house on something.
There you go.
Yeah.
It might have been just not trailer brakes, perhaps.
Okay.
But they had him on the bike.
I don't know. So still not enough braking power for an entire house.
Probably.
Was this Ted Buehler by any chance?
It could have been.
Okay, because I saw him towing a house on Facebook.
Okay.
Like, not actually on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, there was a picture of him on the street towing a house with somebody else.
Could be. I don't know.
So. Yeah.
And
very cool.
I actually saw at the top of one hill, there were four other cyclists pushing behind the house.
Ah.
And then as I skirted past, there was a person with a chain of used tubes tied together and then wrapped around their waist, connected to the person pulling the tiny house.
Wow.
And it was really bungee-ish, so maybe just like rope next time might make it a little more efficient.
Sure, something taut.
Like maybe make a harness.
Or with the ability to be taut.
It was tied to the person?
It was tied to the person's waist.
Weird.
Aren't there laws against that?
Nah, it's Pedalpalooza.
Yeah, not in Oregon.
No
right,
laws.
Okay.
This is kind of the season where some laws go to the wayside.
Well, I mean, I'm down with that. I'm from New Mexico. I mean, we're not really into laws there either.
You know, do you listen to the Nerdist podcast by any chance?
I have a couple times.
Okay. So. They had the interview with Mike Judge, and they were talking to him about...
Oh.
Wait, no. I should... Never mind. That's the one I haven't listened to yet. That's the newest one. It was Mark Maron talking to Mike Judge about being in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And just kind of how there's like a bunch of desert down there. And if you want to go out and like burn a pile of shit in the middle of the desert, you can. It's like basically.
You might not even need to go to the middle of the desert.
You could do it in downtown Albuquerque.
Maybe not downtown. Maybe the first outer ring of suburbia. You could probably do that.
Gotcha. Okay. Good to know.
Stay away from that bosque, though. That's the forest along the Rio Grande.
Uh-huh.
That thing will go up like a Roman candle if you're not careful.
Okay, so no burning piles there.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
No,
but drugs? You could do those in that forest.
Probably.
Okay.
It might have been done once or twice.
You never know.
What possible about, like, Breaking Bad was sort of based on us.
Dry ice bombs? Is that an option?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty happy-go-lucky place, you know.
Yeah.
You could do all kinds of stuff.
So we're in the season where Portland is like Albuquerque for just like a couple weeks then.
You are, although you have a lot of water vapor in the air, I notice. I notice this every time I get off the plane at PDX.
You thought there was water vapor in the air today?
Yes.
Because I was just complaining to you, and I don't know if either of you have noticed, but it's a very, very hot day today by Portland standards.
Indeed.
And Peter thinks that's laughable, which it kind of is from your perspective, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, this is all – weather is all relative, right? I mean, if I were here in December, you'd be like, oh, it's just another day. And I would be very depressed about life and wanting to go back to Albuquerque. So
is it the cold or the dark?
It's the dark and the rain.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly the dark probably.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with that too.
I saw that NOAA issued warnings because it was going to be in the low 90s.
So. Oh, really? Caution, you could overheat.
Yep. And then, you know, the rivers and streams and creeks are low. So, like, most people want to jump into the water.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But they're full of, fecal matter.
You'll hit a rock
full of rocks. Oh, okay. Oh, that. Gotcha.
The fecal matter will cushion it, actually, if you,
it's true.
If you do it right or wrong.
Oh, Willamette River.
I kind of feel like you almost said there was a warning because NOAA said it was going to be in the early 90s, and I got really excited to bust out my
early
plaid and listen to more Nirvana than I normally do.
Yeah. No, it's a special place, the Northwest. We're not used to extreme temperatures in either direction, so welcome to another season. Should we try and call Iliff? Do you think he'd pick up?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Let's find out. Let's just get like our little Pedalpalooza news, because until Pedalpalooza is over, we're going to be covering it. We're going to be talking about it. Next week actually is the last week that I'll be in the studio, and Sean from the Beer Mongers is here.
Woohoo!
And Terry, his brother,
awesome,
is also coming, and I believe their friend Sam, and they have some wonderful adventure stories to tell.
Did you want the number? Or do you
sure.
Want to try
yeah,
out?
Yeah.
Do you want me to read it?
Well
yeah, let's give it out on the air.
Whoever wants to
know
this
guy.
Oh, you know what I did? I just realized. Oh, so here.
Okay, first, I'm going to text them and tell them we're calling.
Here's my low phone life coming into play. I just realized that I was looking for Skype, because that's what I used to use to make phone calls. And I think being in the studio made me look for Skype, but I realize now I actually have a cell phone with a cell signal, and I can call, like, with the normal phone app. Okay, what's the number?
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are transferring a number now in such a way that you do not know what the number is.
It is 9 digits. That's about all we can tell you.
Yes, we're getting reports. Right. It is 9 digits. Unconfirmed at this point.
It has 3 fives. Oh, crap. I hope he answers.
We'll find out.
We can just imitate him if he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's probably on his bike.
Well, it's probably a good idea not to talk on your bike. I mean, on your phone, on your bike, for extended periods of time.
We've all done that, though,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Last night, I kept
calling. Well, reached the mailbox of Alex Hanson. Please leave a message.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any
So we know how much it'll help if we leave a message. Yeah. It's all good. All right. Well, we'll call him some other time.
We'll see
if
he might text back.
Yeah. Suffice to say that Pedalpalooza is happening, and everyone should go out and ride.
Yeah.
Bikes in the street. Every damn day.
Every damn day. Yeah. Cheers to that.
Anything else on the Portland side that we should be apprising people of?
There's a lot of people on the streets.
There are. There's a lot of people on bikes. There's a lot of people in cars. There's a lot of pedestrians.
Yes.
It's just, I think that the city feels fuller to me than it used to. There are more people trying to go places. So we should all be careful. That's number one. Maybe that's our call to action this time around. I don't know. But you got to be cautious. I would say bike is definitely the better way to get around because traffic jams, man. Traffic jams are terrible.
Last night after the, I guess during the Pedalpalooza kickoff ride, and as we were taking up a huge portion of Hawthorne, just bombing downhill at a very slow pace.
We're probably a mile long.
I was just like, can we all just get in cars right now? Like every person get in one car
just
and show what it looks like.
Like our version of that photo, that infographic thing that came out. Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Because I would like to just flash that at everybody that's mad at me for riding my bike.
Seriously. Yeah. So someone go out and take a photo of all the people that were on the kickoff ride in individual cars. Yeah. Or we could just do like the super legal ride idea where everyone stops at a stop sign in a single file line. Takes forever.
It's
a great protest. Seriously. Yeah. 1 foot down. That's the law. We're not telling you to break the law. That's not a thing you should do. I'm just saying it's inconvenient. So anyways. Well, Peter, let's talk about your book. So just published this, right?
Yes.
And it's called Spandex Optional Bike Touring. Eric is holding it here. And the subtitle is How to Ride Long Distance the Cheap and Easy Way. So, spandex optional.
You don't have to wear spandex.
You don't have to.
It's totally optional.
So I'm playing the devil's advocate here because I don't actually wear spandex myself.
Okay.
But tell me why.
Well, because, I mean, physically you just don't have to. You can still ride a bike without wearing spandex. I know that, some people look at a bike and they think, spandex. Or they see somebody riding a bike in spandex and they think, I have to have that.
Yeah, I can't go out and ride.
Yeah.
Because I don't have that outfit. This.
And no, you don't. I have personally ridden, 5,000 miles worth of bicycle tour and never worn spandex.
Very nice.
And I don't know why. Some people swear by it, mm-hmm. but I'm just saying you don't have to do it if you don't want to.
Right. Because some people swear at it.
This is a psychological barrier to entry to bicycle mm-hmm. touring, and I'm not down with those.
Right.
Because everyone should be bicycle touring because it's really fun mm-hmm. and good recreation and cheap and a great way to travel. But if you're seeing some neon iron superbug out there in spandex.
I like that term.
Yeah. Don't think you have to be that.
Okay.
You don't.
That's good. I'm glad to have another voice in the conversation that's saying that. And we should clarify that we're not like anti-spandex. If that's your style, like dressing up, if you want to be, a super iron
neon Iron Man super bug.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. If you want to be that, you can. No
totally,
one's stopping you.
Totally with you.
Totally legal. But,
Some of my best friends wear spandex.
No, seriously. Yeah, it's... it's the sort of thing where I feel like a lot of people kind of get boxed out of this idea. Well, we should clarify, too, that, Eric, you just did the Oregon Outback. Did you wear spandex?
Yeah, I've got...
We're going to love you either way.
No, I didn't, but I would like to point out that the organizers of the unorganized ride pointed out that if you don't wear spandex, you know, the locals and the communities you're rolling through, there's a much better chance of them being more welcoming.
Ah.
Not just dismissing you as this wealthy neon... But what was it?
A neon Iron Man super Iron bug. Man. You know, I'm beginning to think that should have been the title.
Yeah.
That's...
So...
It's got legs.
Right.
So it was interesting. We started a day earlier than everyone else because we knew that if we started at the same time as everyone else, we would instantly be in the back.
Ah.
Because
you were rolling...
A lot.
We explained yet how you rolled on this? Because I think we talked about it off mic, but just to clarify the people that haven't heard our conversation, you rode with unconventional bicycles.
Right. We had a Iliff on the Yuba Mundo cargo bike with a grill. So we were team grilled by bike, and we split up the components amongst the four people on our team.
You also did you have a ping pong table?
Yeah, we had ping pong, a couple hatchets for hatchet throwing.
Yes.
The essentials.
Right. This is all like the things that you wouldn't normally find on a bicycle tour, and yet you did it without spandex.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, the front, there's a lot of people going for records and doing it in, you know, sub 3 days, and there a lot of them were wearing spandex.
Right.
It was fun to hang out with the back of the pack that were, you know, wearing cutoff jean shorts.
The bad kids in the back of the bus, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a time when you were a spandex person, Peter? Or you've always just been kind of like normal clothes guy?
Yeah. I've always just looked at that and think, I don't want to be that guy or something like that. So.
It doesn't seem very Albuquerque to me.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Although you'd be surprised.
I'm sure there are some.
The great thing about Albuquerque is a sort of sprawling western town in the style of Phoenix and Los Angeles, only smaller. So you'd think that wouldn't be a huge bicycling culture. But on the other hand, there's 350 days of sunshine a year.
Yeah.
So that really helps a lot.
And culturally, you've got some like high paid executives that want to buy expensive toys and wear a uniform and go out and do something. So
yeah,
I can see how that would happen.
And there's some luck of geography too, because we don't get much rain, but when we do get it, it comes all at once. So we've got this elaborate network of ditches.
Ah.
And of course, the Rio Grande has a trail next to it. So typically they put a trail next to the ditch.
Oh, sure.
And so we've actually got a very good road biking network within the city.
Oh, nice. And, so like a separated infrastructure, like you can ride a path in any number of directions and ride along all these ditches that may or may not have water in them. And
I mean, it's not complete. It's definitely piggybacking on the ditch infrastructure, but it's not.
It's, the ditches were there first.
Yeah, but it's good nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Nice. So tell us about your bicycle touring. Like where have you been? And how did you fall in love with it?
I grew up in a weird family with no car, and we would come down to Portland and take the Max all the time. Actually, one of my first childhood memories was back when the Max was just from downtown to Gresham.
Ooh, Blue Line.
Yeah.
86.
So, well, it wasn't even a color line. It was just the Max.
The
it
Max.
Was like, this is it. This is all there is. Wait a few years.
As in like the maximum.
Right,
maximum
exactly.
Light rail ever.
So I would come down and I was six or something and Dad would say, what do you want to do? And I would say, I want to ride the Max. And so...
Of course you do.
Yeah, that's the sort of family I grew up. So cycling and alternative transportation was all the rage all the time. And then I think it was the summer before my freshman year of college, I resolved that I was going to ride from Olympia to Portland in a day and did it. And I guess that was my first... legit tour.
It's like 110 miles, 120?
Yeah, 110, 120.
Okay,
like
yeah.
So,
wait, how old were you?
17.
Okay.
Something like that.
So you got started early.
Yeah. And then, I didn't do anything for a while until I found myself in that sort of cliche situation where you're in a corporate drone and you want to get out and live life, man,
yeah,
and
so
stuff like
that. Post-college.
So, yeah, actually more than post-college.
I never took a gap year. I want one.
Right, yeah. So I did that. I quit, and then I rode from Olympia down to Crescent City, California.
Ooh.
Along the coast, through Brookings, where I used to be a reporter at the paper there.
Oh, yeah.
And so after that, that's when the hook really set. And then I've done some tours from Colorado, wandering around down back to New Mexico, and then from Albuquerque to Pocatello, Idaho, Albuquerque to L.A., and then Albuquerque to Norman, Oklahoma, which is a weird place to go, but I have friends there, and I'm trying to do the transcontinental in installments.
Okay, nice.
Most people who do that, for some reason, have tons of time. I don't know how they get that, but...
You get to be a high-powered executive with a fancy uniform.
Yeah. Or retired or something like that.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. I'm trying to remember who... I don't know if it was an author or somebody we were talking to that said, like, bicycle tourists often break down into just a couple of categories. Like, most of them are either in the educational system or they're, like, around college-aged or they're, like, super old.
I have a chapter in there sort of like that, and I break it down into the young and the restless... Or I think I call them young guns. If you measure your career commitments.
Or young guns
and,
too? Is that the Bon Jovi song?
Possibly so. the retired set. And then there's a smaller category called, I forget what I call the
wild
the,
cards?
The disenchanted.
Dirtbags.
Ooh.
The dirtbags.
Dirtbags.
The dirtbags are fun because they're just, I don't know, they spend no money, so they don't need to make any money.
Oh, right.
So they're just like rolling through town, dumpster diving, poaching campsites. So it's perfect for them.
Right.
But then there's this other category, and I profile a guy in the book named Stephen Gillen, and he was some high-powered middle manager of some type at a major national bank and got fed up with it. So, you know, if you're done with... capitalism or the military industrial complex or whatever you're mad at, then you go on a bike tour.
There's a lot of room to escape from that system that has been oppressing you or bringing you down.
And who knows what's been oppressing you? Maybe.
It could be anything. There's a lot of reasons that people are dissatisfied.
Maybe it's the socialist conspiracy or something.
Probably so.
Whatever.
Thanks, Obama. Just kidding.
No, this is cool, though. So here's the five categories. So ask yourself, where are you? One, young guns. Two, cool old people. Three, the restless. Four, dirt bags. And five, wild cards.
Wild cards. So what's a wild card like?
Wild card's just a catch-all for everybody.
Anybody else?
I've actually been a wild card at some point in my life. So I used to be a young gun, but you know now I'm 30s and you know I'm over the hill and whatnot. But so the last tour I did from Albuquerque to Oklahoma, I was working as a video producer at that point. So I'd get up an hour before dawn, be on the road at dawn, working or ride until noon, find a hotel, check in, and work until 8 or 9.
Just post
that
up.
Night. So that's kind of a wild card,
cool. Yeah.
Move because I mean you know that most people are camping. And,
sure.
You know, actually on vacation, but
Tim Mooney comes to mind.
Oh, true, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he's... I think he's in the educational system. I want to say he teaches something, but... sorry, Tim. Unless you want that to be a mystery, then I'm not sorry.
He's got all his devices with, and I know
totally.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and he does love his tech. He's very well equipped. Speaking of which, Tim Mooney, I think we put it in the show notes for last week, but the producer of the Pedal Shift Project, I'll say that again for clarity... And when he's doing tours, he's done updates, like audio updates and stuff. So there's actually a companion podcast to his tour podcast. And I forget what it's called. I want to say like Pedal Shift Tour Journals or something like that. But he does a 5-minute update
sometimes
a couple times a day.
2 minutes or something. Like, that's really... Yeah,
the last one in the car at the end of his trip, like he rented a car and drove himself back to Washington, D.C., where he lives, and it was 16 seconds long. It was just like, so, it's raining now, but I beat the rain. Cool. And that's it. But it's pretty cool because you can kind of follow along like with as much detail as you want. He talks a lot about like what happened. And so, if your curiosity is not satiated by Peter Rice's book, there's even more stuff out there. But, you also, you're not a big fan of training.
No.
You don't have aspirations to become an athlete, an Olympic-level athlete, and you don't think that'll...
Not particularly. Okay. No, training, again, so this whole idea of this book is to take down the psychological barriers that people have to touring. Because I know a lot of people who could tour.
Right.
They already commute. They're already reasonably athletic. My cousins down in near Reed are just like this.
You were mentioning them earlier. You were saying, they're like totally ripe as bicycle tourists. They just haven't done it yet.
Mid-40s, their kid is college age, so they don't have to worry about childcare or anything like that anymore. They hiked around Mount Hood last summer. And
around the whole thing.
Yeah.
So they like extreme challenges.
Yeah,
they like things
into
that
this
are challenging.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe this is my task this weekend. But there's a lot of people out there like that who could do this, and there's just too many things that pop up in their heads saying like, why? What about this? Why can't I can't do that? I'm afraid of this. Blah blah blah.
Right.
And this is slaying all of those.
Exactly. Yeah. In a single blow.
Yes.
Just kind of running a scimitar
across.
This
pen is
whatever.
Mightier than your fear.
Yes, no kidding. So can you issue a call to action for us?
Absolutely.
Okay, do it now.
Fellow Americans, this is Peter Rice, author of Spandex Optional Bicycle Touring, How to Ride Long Distance the Cheap and Easy Way. You need to ride your bike to vacation. You already ride your bike to work. So now it's time to ride your bike to a cool place where you can recreate. It's easy. All you need to do is think to yourself, how many miles can I ride in today? Is that 10 miles? Is it 20 miles? Let's say it's 25 miles. That's a nice round number. Take 25 miles on a map, start at your house, and get a radius going, 25 miles. Or maybe start that radius at the edge of your town's transit system or something like that. Go 25 miles, find a nice B&B, ride there, stay at the B&B, go to a nice restaurant, go back to your B&B, watch some trashy TV, get up the next day, and go back to your house. Ride back to your house. That makes you a bicycle tourist. That is all it takes.
Amen.
You do not need spandex. You do not need to worry about semis running you over. You do not need to be rich. You do not need to be a mechanic. That is all you need. Ride 25 miles and back. Done.
There you go.
If you want to later, you can camp and get all hardcore and stuff. You can even wear spandex. That's all you need, though.
I feel like you're speaking directly to me.
That's funny because we're in the same room.
But he wasn't looking at me.
Let's talk, Krista.
Okay. Wait, what do you hear him saying to you?
That I need to get off my ass and actually do it.
Well, I think he said it nicer than that.
Oh,
but yeah.
Well, maybe music, I just need him to also record a personal one that's my alarm clock every morning. It is like, Krista, get off your ass and ride your bike for vacation because you can.
Well, how about this? You travel, right?
I do.
Now, I'm going on a limb here, but one of the things we all love about traveling is you get to that new place and you have a totally different mindset. And you look out at the world, you look out at the sky or the street or something, and you'll be like, wow, I'm in a foreign place. I worked hard to get here. Like, I'm doing this right now. I'm in Portland. I woke up in Albuquerque this morning, and I'm like, holy cow, look at all these people who bike and stuff. And there's places like the Beer Monger, and it's just this whole new, wonderful, wide world. You feel this when you travel, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that my traveling requirements are the work is physically more difficult than my normal day, like backpacking. There's beer involved.
Good.
And something beautiful to look at.
So this is the genius of bicycle touring, and this is why you should get into it more, is because you can get to that place for a lot easier and a lot cheaper than you can doing what I did today. I mean, giving $175 to Southwest Airlines, and here I am.
And that's not easy to do, right?
Give $175 to Southwest Airlines?
Or to anybody.
I mean, it's kind of a pain. I mean,
deal with the rat race.
My alternatives for getting to Portland were slim, but...
Right.
Yeah, but you could... I remember I went on a tour a year ago, and we just went over to the East Mountains, the Sandia Mountains, right next to Albuquerque. And I got into that kind of state of mind. I'm looking out at the sky and thinking, like, what an amazing, wonderful, foreign world this is. No, it's not. I was 30 minutes away from Albuquerque. But I got there, and I got to that state of mind, which is the true vacation, right?
Yeah.
It's about what goes on in your brain, not where you actually are. And I got to that for peanuts in terms of money. And it was outdoor recreation, and it was healthy and wonderful. And
yeah. Did you eat actual peanuts?
No.
Are you a fan of peanuts, or do you have an allergy or anything?
No allergies.
Okay, that's good.
Just, no.
Not a fan.
I declined peanuts three times today.
Oh, wait, they give you peanuts on the airplane?
Yeah, Southwest.
Oh, I gotta fly Southwest sometime. Okay, gotcha.
Southwest. I know.
Because I love peanuts. And yeah. They don't give them out on a lot of airlines anymore.
I heard you ranting about Spirit the other day.
Oh, right, yeah.
And you have to pay $9 for their peanuts. I don't know what you have to pay for their
peanuts.
It's
probably $9.
Yeah.
That would probably be my guess.
No, Southwest?
Yeah.
Give it to you for free.
Free peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that'll be like the next terrorist tactic? Like somebody just dresses up as a flight attendant and they just
peanuts?
Hand out peanuts that are laced with anthrax or something.
So we're talking about kind of like the Rajneeshis of the mid-80s in
yes.
Central Oregon, where they went into a salad bar and said, die infidels and put salmonella in.
They also
whatever.
Sprayed random stuff on produce in grocery stores that didn't do anything.
Okay, right, right. So, anything's possible.
This might be a good book, actually. The Annals of Stupid Failed Terrorist Attacks. You know, down in Brookings...
They're not checking for it. I mean, we've seen the recent...
The whole TSA thing.
Yes.
Do you know the story of the firebombing of the forest near Brookings?
I don't.
Japanese sub during World War II docks near Brookings.
Really?
They send a plane to firebomb the National Forest there, trying to set it on fire. And
the sub.
And thus, you know, end the Allied cause. It starts a really small fire, then it burns itself out, and then that's it.
Okay. Well, you know, Northwest forests are pretty resilient, especially near the coast.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had some bad forest fires, but yeah, coastal forests, not a good place to try and start a forest fire.
Yeah.
So this was not trying to eliminate the sub, but the sub was there.
The sub was there, and I guess the plane took off from the sub, or the sub was supporting the plane or somehow. I'm
gotcha.
Not sure exactly how that worked.
Right. And that's why supported rides are terrible. You go out there, you do it yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
Good thing the Japanese didn't know that during the war.
Right, right. I'm curious if you've ever wished that you had like support or something. Because you go out without, you don't have a sag wagon when you go out on tour.
No.
In general.
No, not really. I mean, if it's a short hop, sometimes I can just like call a friend or something.
Sure.
Although in all my years, I've only had to do that once. Do you want a segue? I don't know. It's sort of, it's a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm.
Cause when
like knowing that you can just say, hey, I'm tired, pick me up.
Right.
And then like half an hour down the road, all right, I'm ready to bike again. And you get out and do it until you feel like it
right.
sucks.
Cause that will prevent you from looking deep within yourself and finding that next node of strength to get you to wherever you need to go. So, I mean, I think big group ride with sag wagon could be fun. It could be a great social experience, but it's probably not going to be a spiritual experience.
Right. And see, this is the thing that I think is probably the most valuable. Like, I'm not even against the sag wagon so much for like the oil thing or like, hey, we should all drive less, even though I think we should. But it's also that whole thing of like, yeah, when do you find the neck? When do you like go down another layer? Like when have you sloughed off all of your pleasantries and you're like, well, this sucks. How do I respond to this? And if your response is, get me out of this immediately, then you never learn anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if
your
if
stories
you do,
aren't that good either.
Yeah, exactly. So I went out and, you know, mile 45, I was kind of like, and so I stopped. Good story. And then I found $5.
Yeah, you'd be amazed.
Yeah.
I mean, well, no, you wouldn't be. You do this all the time. So
I might be amazed. Try.
So this one time, I was riding this total piece of shit bike, and because that's what really makes touring interesting.
Yeah, can we define total piece of shit bike? Like, what? How bad are we talking?
It's the same level of bike that if you left it out to be stolen somewhere, it would probably still be there.
It would never be stolen. Okay, so we're talking about like
this was some
like
garbage.
A Sears brand or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even remember the color, but it was something my dad had in the shed for years.
Yeah.
And I was coming up from New Mexico. I needed a bike to ride to Glacier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, why not ride this thing?
This'll do the trick.
Yeah. So it's a great trip. I went down by St. Helens and on the north side of the gorge and then dipped down into, Enterprise Joseph.
Oh yeah.
Down there into Idaho.
The Wallows.
Yeah, well, that was gorgeous. So I'm coming into Idaho, going down this hill, and I break two spokes. And this is part of the book, right? I don't you don't have to be a mechanical genius. And I say that because I'm not, and that makes it easier for me, and I don't have to be a hypocrite that way. I don't know what I'm doing. So I go to the friggin' Ace Hardware in little town in Idaho.
Nice.
And I'm like, Ed, do you have anything? And no. And it's 30 minutes later, I've basically just made the situation a hell of a lot worse. And so then this guy comes up, a pretty crusty rural dude, and his wife come up, and they're like, hop into the back of the truck. We'll take you to the next town. And cousin of mine has a junkyard there. We'll see what we can do.
Perfect.
So yeah, within an hour and a half, we'd visited this junkyard and miraculously found an equally piece of shit wheel to go with the piece of shit bike to just replace that whole situation there.
Okay, these match.
And then, 300 miles later, I'm cruising into Glacier National Park. It's totally out of true.
Sure.
And I've got the old wheel strapped to the back of my pack there.
Spare parts.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to need.
Did you bring it along thinking like, hey, maybe I can use this later?
I think I actually brought it because my dad wanted it.
You're like, oh, no, this has sentimental value.
Maybe he's going to sell it for scrap or something like that.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, who knows? Okay. So, but that's a great example.
Right.
Of, you know, you can meet some very interesting fellow Americans bicycling because you're inevitably going to have to troubleshoot something.
Right.
And it may have nothing to do with your bike. And if you want your bike to be solid and bomb-proof, you can pretty much get there.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it as reliable as any, you know, newer car.
Right.
If you really want to. But you just, you know, as with car road trips, stuff can happen and you got to figure it out, or you just have to sit at the Ace Hardware on the sidewalk long enough until the solution drives by in a 30-year-old pickup truck.
There we go. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to be said. That's one of the things I like best about bike touring. And Eric, maybe you can speak to this having been out on one yourself, because you had some mechanical failures, right?
Yeah, luckily we were able to fix them on the road. But we did have some awesome encounters with locals. Like, there was this one night where it was the second night, and thunderstorms and rain were coming through.
Where is this?
This was in... shit.
Was it Shanico?
No.
It was
the night after Sprague River. It's like Grass Valley or something.
Okay.
I don't know. Not too good with names, as you'll find out when you hear that. But anyway, this convenience store stayed open a couple hours late, and they were like flagging down cyclists as we were going by, like flashing their store lights so that we'd stop in. And then they were telling us that the O'Leary clan opened up their barn for everyone passing through. So we went to this barn, and there was like 60 cyclists.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
So there was like a barn party, and then everyone just crashed, and it was cool because we didn't have to set up and take down our tents or sleeping setups or whatever. That was really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wait, does that mean like everybody was like changing their pants and stuff without a tent around them?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Well, it's a barn party.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, though, just like the whole thing of we can insulate ourselves so well against discomfort if we have all of the conveniences of modern society. And I think something I like about the bike touring experience is that you really can be uncomfortable, like sometimes with no way to fix it. I mean, maybe there's relief down the road, but you're going to have to spend some time in that place. So like when it was a chain that broke, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you were in that chain broken place, like what were your thoughts?
You know, I was actually a little frustrated.
This kind of sucks.
It was pretty hot both days when it happened. There wasn't like any shade around. It was kind of like high desert-ish. And the second time, the first time my chain was starting to make some noise. So I figured it broke because I didn't have enough lube on it. Really dry. So then I added some lube, and then the second time it broke, I think, because I had too much lube and it was acquiring just tons of grit and sand, and the whole chain was just like caked in crap.
Gotcha.
And so when I had to change both my hands were just like entirely black, and it was pretty frustrating. So I had to enlist help. Luckily, my whole team was there to support me. And I had to enlist help. Be like, can you use these? Can you get the wet wipes out of my bag?
Yeah.
Eric really hates when his hands or feet are really dirty.
Yeah,
right.
True. Yeah.
No, it's something though. Like, I mean, obviously, it sucked in the moment, but like, can you look back on that and say, hey, I'm glad that happened because I learned something? Like, was there a even if it's as simple as like, you shouldn't put too much lube on your chain.
You know, I'm really not too glad about it at all.
Okay.
No, sorry. But getting to your earlier point, I would say that I became much happier with being uncomfortable in many ways, such as cowboy camping, which I've never really done before.
Oh, are we talking about just like wild, not paying for a place?
Just not using a tent either. Just like sleeping bag and a mattress. I'd never really done that before this trip, and we ended up doing it most of the nights. And then also not showering for a long time. I was totally cool with it. Like, we got to a campsite at the very last night when we got to the Deschutes State Park, and everyone was like, I can't wait to take a shower. And I'm just like, I'm pretty good, actually.
Kind of enjoying the sheen I've built up.
And then I got back to Portland, and I'm like, I kind of want to go camping in Forest Park. Like, I wasn't done. I remember you were saying you couldn't assimilate back after your long tour.
Did you get some of that?
This was only a week, but I totally had.
Okay,
That is tough.
Peter, have you had some like return shock or whatever, like culture shock when you get out of the wilderness?
Usually the shock comes if I get to a big city in the middle of a tour.
Okay.
And it's just too much, and I have to try to keep pedaling through to get to the next small town that I will actually stay at.
I feel comfortable here, not back with all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. But usually at the end of the tour, there's such an emotional high and such a copious amount of food and beverage that really eases that transition.
It's a nice landing pad, yeah.
Actually, back to what you were saying for just a bit. I mean, I don't really appreciate the bad things that have become learning experiences on tour for themselves, but it really is nice when you're in the rest of your life and you have, some crazy challenge come up that you can kind of look back on that and think, well, I was knee deep in crud and didn't take a shower for 10 days, and I got through that okay. I think touring, the experiences you have a way of leveling out your kind of constitutional personality, if for lack of a better term, for the rest of your life.
And after thinking about it, I think that the reason I didn't like those experiences was because I was holding my team up
Whereas, like, we could all be sailing right now if it wasn't for me and my damn chair.
Right. But other times when we faced, or I personally faced, like, big mental walls. Like, the last 60 miles were just over these rollers and rollers coming up to the Dells.
Yeah.
But after getting through that, it's like, why can't I just bike to Mount Hood and back on a weekend? It just opens doors to so many more things.
Yeah. It's just kind of like you're... did you say the bar has been raised or something like that?
Yeah, may have. I just wrote this book. I don't really, I don't know what's in it.
Can I ask a question?
Fire away.
Who's Jerry?
Jerry Bupre is a mechanic in Albuquerque.
And a demigod, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a total character and a half, one. I say in the book that Jerry, you've heard of, the car situation in Cuba, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're all old and they're all just sort of being nursed along by these amazing mechanics who
cobbled together like crazy.
That's Jerry, but for bikes.
Mm.
He has a bunch of old gear. He doesn't care where it came from so long as you are actively trying to destroy it.
I did like that. I remember reading the description of this guy. I was like, oh yeah, he doesn't care. Yeah, as long as you're abusing it, that's great.
Yeah,
he's just got a lot of good tips in here.
Total dirtbag too. So he's got a lot of good tips about rummaging around a auto parts store dumpster for old motor oil that you can use as chain lube and
there
stuff
we go.
Like that.
Does he dumpster dive for food also?
Not for food. Okay. I don't know about. I mean, I have friends who dumpster dive in cities where they have an established routine, but
they know
if you're
the spots.
Doing that, there's if you get to a town and there's one grocery store and you piss off that one grocery store owner by dumpster diving there, you could be in serious trouble.
Run out of town or locked up in town.
Yeah. Use extreme caution on that one.
So he's got this awesome tip I've never heard of, and I might actually use it tomorrow. Because I've got this mangled rim, and I keep getting flats because I continue to use it. but he says, take an old tire that is slightly smaller than your current one, cut the edges off about an eighth inch or so. Then you stuff that beadless old tire into your new tire. Use baby powder to grease the skids if that's proving difficult. It's the perfect liner, free, recycled, and just as effective as those $80 tires. The only drawback is it adds weight to the tire, but that's no big deal.
Wait.
And then ride it into the ground and laugh all the way to the bank.
Jerry has this huge collection of old tires that he's always trying to get me to ride. So
nice.
Stuff that's been thoroughly rejected.
Like,
by
no, check
his,
this out. It, like,
his other
this,
clients.
This
yeah.
shit is ruined. Use it.
Yeah, that yeah. is. Oh, God, I'm having flashbacks. That sounds exactly like him. And it's, you know, it's Albuquerque, too. So he's got this huge pile of tires in his backyard. The yeah. sun beating down. There's no humidity at all. These
right.
things are cracked. They look like they're about to give out. Mm-hmm. And you know, usually you can still get several hundred miles out of them.
That's great, man. That's great. So
he's all about that.
Yeah. So you said dumpster diving for food you're not a big fan of.
I mean, I would never do it. I mean, okay. I wouldn't dumpster dive normally.
Right, right.
But I'm a hopeless square, I guess.
Oh, no, I mean, yeah, obviously you're doing something right because you ride your bike without spandex, so.
Well, I do what I can.
Yeah.
No, there's actually, because I know there's a small subset of those who are interested in touring who would also be interested in dumpster diving.
Right.
And my one comment in the book was, what are you, nuts?
That's right. I do remember this bull quote. Yeah.
And
I'm a fan of like half-eaten burritos that are left over at, you know, some, like, I don't know.
It's like you steal them from some other table at the restaurant or something like that?
Well, if somebody walks out, it's no longer stealing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going in the garbage anyways. It's like pre-dumpster diving.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with that, though, because like, there's the situation, like if you're at a pizza parlor and you're like, oh, hey, a pizza, and so you like start eating it, and then the people come back from the bathroom and they're like, so what about our pizza? I've always thought, it's never happened to me, but I always thought if I did that, I would totally buy them another pizza. Because I'm not doing it. I'm not necessarily doing it because I can't afford food. I'm just doing it because, like, hey, free food.
I think Miss Manners would approve of that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. That's good. Well, but then there's that, like, I would never dig into a trash can for, like, a sandwich or something. But if there's, like, a fast food bag on the top of the pile in a trash can... Like, there's so much salt in that stuff, it's not going to go bad. If it's on top of the trash can, it's probably good.
Yeah.
Found a great cheeseburger that way.
This is a series of judgment calls here.
It is, yes. And, well, I mean, if you look back in the show history, there's also the scatological emergencies.
So, that did come to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can make underpants out of anything.
Hashtag simpler living. So, yeah. What
you
else?
Might find it in the dumpster right next to your bag of leftover food.
How convenient. I've been needing some underwear. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, I would much rather eat food that I found in a garbage can than wear underpants that I found in a garbage can. That's like, they're there for a reason. You know?
Sometimes. That's probably, I mean, the food's probably there for a reason, too. But
usually that reason is more like, I'm too full. I ordered too many cheeseburgers. So, you know.
They're only 69 cents.
I know, yeah. No, seriously, that one I found the other week, so good. So what else should people know about the book, Peter?
Well, gosh, it's a fantastic book, really.
Yeah.
It's Huck Finn, Anna Karenina. Spandex optional bicycle touring.
Yes.
That's pretty much how that goes. No, and this is the goal is if you are a somebody who's familiar with bikes, like a commuter or something like that, and you thought, hey, I might want to ride to the next town or the next county or state or something like that. This is hopefully the kick you need.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in a sort of non-threatening language that you want.
The kick in the gel padded shorts or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good sense of humor, too, from I've just been skimming through it. I'm enjoying it.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, we even chose the drawings to be non-threatening.
Yeah. They're very non-threatening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they're good.
For example, this is the page that says it's the illustration of the beginning of the section, Why Training Sucks, and it's a dude with like a ripped arm holding up a bike frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's hand drawn. It's because there's so many books out there. I didn't come here to trash my competition or anything, but
they're terrible.
They've got, because there is a thing with bike tourists, and I've done this myself, where we try to be a badass, right?
Like, no, seriously. Like, I rode like 100 miles, you know, like 100 degrees.
I
only ate 100 calories, yeah.
Sawed my toothbrush in half to save weight.
Speed holes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did all this stuff. And so that sort of exclusionary tendency, I think, does drive people away.
Like, no, you're not as cool as I am, seriously.
Yeah. So, but even the drawings are meant to be like, it's cool.
Yes. Did you illustrate?
No, that was my girlfriend, Lindsay.
Oh, good job, Lindsay.
Job there.
Yeah.
She did, yeah.
Seriously. No, it's good. And it was funny because I turned to the back. You know, like sometimes you do, you turn to the back of the book and you're like, what does this guy look like? And it's a drawing of you.
Yep.
So, yeah. But it's surprisingly accurate. Like, you look very much like the drawing in the book.
No, and Lindsay's Chihuahua mix, Cheddar,
yes,
is also in that.
Oh, so he
with
is.
My, yeah. With my bike crate.
Yeah.
Is it a milk crate? Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
So are you, do you use the milk crate on the regular?
Yeah.
Is it touring?
No.
Oh, okay. Pretty arrow, I was going to say.
Yeah, I've got...
speed holes.
I've got two bikes. I have a really small apartment, so I only have two bikes. But one is the 30-year-old Trek I take everywhere on tour.
Is it a 520?
You know, I have no idea.
Oh, okay, that's
cool. I'm so not a gear mechanical person.
It's a Trek.
I barely know it's a Trek.
Is it steel?
Yes.
Cool.
I know that. Because it's, American.
Because it's real.
Yeah. So I've got that, and then I've got this other, crappy mountain bike that Jerry hooked me up with. And by crappy Jerry, I mean wonderful. I love it. No, but that's the sort of bike I thrash around. And, you know, Albuquerque's a kind of higher crime town than the distinguished city of roses. So,
oh, thanks.
You want to have a bike you can feel comfortable losing.
Right.
That's the bike. I'll lock that up in front of the 24-hour diner and
perfect.
I've locked that up at the Albuquerque airport.
Really?
And flown away.
Take off for like a week or something like that. Come back, still there.
I've done 5 days.
Okay.
Left it there.
I have like aspirations towards that, towards finding like some shitty bike. Or actually, I've been thinking about what are those old like pneumatic tire scooters we used to ride when we were kids? Because those aren't really around anymore. You can get like a Razor scooter, but like
those
the ones
suck.
With
you got to have pneumatic tires.
I know.
How do you absorb the everything?
Seriously, I want to get one of those and lock it up like wherever it is that I need to go, and then like just leave it there.
It was like a six or 8-inch tire.
Yeah, totally.
Those are the best.
Yeah,
I think if this whole bike to the airport thing could succeed anywhere, it's Portland.
Right.
Honestly,
they've got really pretty
they
secure
do it here?
Bike parking. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic! All right. Yeah.
I've never left my bike there. I'm also a little bit nervous about that. Like whenever I go to the airport, I take the Max. But
yeah, see, that's the other problem.
Right.
It's so damn convenient.
Sorry. Back to the scooters because I love scooters.
Yes.
They have adult sized scooters now.
Right.
And it's for dogs that love pulling.
Oh, really?
And so they actually have like 20-inch wheels or 24, 26, like some pretty big size wheels, and then you can like hook your dog up with a harness, or you can just ride it.
Okay, so if you're looking for one of those, you could find one.
They are available. I looked, and they were way outside of anyone's price range for a scooter.
Gotcha.
But I'm guessing, like the Dropout Club or some local bike club could hook you up with a weld scooter.
Sure. All those people that like weld frames together and stuff and make their own custom bikes. Yeah. You could probably make a scooter.
Yep.
And no drivetrain, so it's like way, way simpler.
For sure.
Also, those Amish push bikes. Have you guys seen these?
No.
No.
It's like that pneumatic scooter thing, but the wheels are 26-inch wheels. And instead of a drivetrain or a seat, they've just got like a big platform. And apparently the Amish are against drivetrains and seats because it would allow you to get too far from home too quickly. And they're all about nurturing community.
Are those the ones that you kind of just steer back and forth constantly, and that's how they propel themselves?
Like those swivel skateboards?
No, not exactly. It's like that. And I saw some Amish kids swerving back and forth, but I think that was just because they liked it. It was like fun. they're working outside of a shop.
Even the Amish need to have fun.
Yes, they do.
Well, they have trampolines.
They do. Well, they're not. Yeah, those are not gas-powered or electric or anything like that.
And they don't propel you long distances.
True. Yeah. Optimally. There's also what's the other thing? Apparently air power is okay. So like when they have their shops, that was where I saw the kids on the push bikes. It was at the end of the Strasbourg Rail Museum train, and it's like a 1 mile ride or whatever. But they stopped at the end of the line, and there was like these Amish kids and scooters, and then like the shop where they make like aluminum siding or something. But it's all air power tools because they don't believe in electricity and they don't believe in like gas. So
do they not believe it exists, or are they?
They don't believe it exists. There's no way all these people are getting around using gasoline. Yeah,
it'll ruin it.
I would love to live in that world. So the website for this book, Peter, is
peterbrice.com is probably the best one to go for there. Just search Spandex Optional on Amazon or wherever you get books.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you for coming in.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. This is a total blast here.
Enjoy your time here in Portland.
I will.
Where you've been before. Actually, the Rose Parade is tomorrow, so I don't know how long you're in town. But if you want to sit on a curb with a bunch of sweaty people and watch people march by with like sousaphones and stuff, it's going to happen tomorrow.
It might be competing with the family reunion in Lake Oswego. But,
okay. Well, they're both tempting options.
You never know.
Yeah, excellent.
Come by, have a burger.
Very good. I'd be more inclined if you said that you were just going to leave it like on the top of some trash pile.
You can arrange that, Brian.
Okay, excellent. I'll just kind of drop by like surreptitiously. Oh, there's that half-eaten hamburger.
Yeah, you get that natural.
It's just a podcaster, Grandma. Don't worry.
What's the next book?
It's something completely different. It's going to be about Sri Lankan curry.
Whoa.
Really? Like all about curry.
Yeah, so a childhood friend of mine from Olympia, old family friend, in fact, is from Sri Lanka. She came here. She married an American, and she's always had this sort of informal list of curry recipes. And so working with her husband, who's also something of a curry aficionado, we're kind of adapting that into a book, because curry is the holy grail of food, if you ask me. It's easy, it's cheap, and you can... It's really hard to get something that tastes that good and is that unique for that trifling little amount of effort.
Seriously, like that, there really is far. There are not that many less expensive foods.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You can make it at home for like beans.
Yeah,
or peanuts,
and in 30 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got Mastering the Art of French Cooking on my shelf. You know, I can
right.
I will throw down. I will spend 5 hours making that beef bourguignon.
You
but,
can fucking souffle.
I don't. You know, if you got an hour, curry.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and anyway. That's awesome. Well, I'm excited about this.
Well, we can come back and talk about curry if you want.
Excellent.
It's simpler living.
Well, and it's also vegetarian. So if you lean that way.
Often
it's,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And gluten free, and it's crazy.
But it doesn't have to be. That's
no.
the thing. Yeah.
Get some naan in there.
Right, right. I do love naan. Hey, Eric, do you want to help me read the credits?
Oh, I'd love to.
All right, Sue. So if you don't mind undoing that that little microphone there. Oh, did I say thank you, Eric Iverson, for being here?
Oh, lovely.
And we should say that we're going to have, in not too distant future, we're going to have all the audio from your adventures on the Oregon Outback. We're going to edit that down and put it out as another episode. Thank you so much for taking audio recording equipment into the wilderness.
We had a lot of fun with it, and I'm looking forward to what we actually said.
Yes. Krista, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
Good
thanks.
To see you. Also, these two are both donors to the podcast every month. Like, and then they still come in here and volunteer their time. So,
and
can you believe it?
Should all do it too?
Aw, thanks. Glad I didn't have to say it. All right, our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text. Please call. We'd like your voice on the show. It's 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for Headlines Sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors.
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood.
Did you skip a line?
Oh, we're just going with group number two here. Because
oh,
we
sorry.
Thanked them on the last
oh,
show.
Oh, man, we're never going to make it.
We got
it.
So many, yeah.
Allison Wiley, Andy Bruner, Dave Knows.
Lars V., Chris Smith, Christy Kaster.
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jarmet,
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Adderstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna Christus Kukas,
John Wasserman, and Andre Johnson.
That's right. Okay, everybody, brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Come over here. So, or actually, can you see this if I turn it this way?
Hold on.
Kind of, sort of. Perfect.
Are we doing the full credits?
Yeah, we'll do the full credits, and we'll do group number two down here at the bottom.
So, how does it work?
So, I will read the bolded parts.
Got it.
And you read the non-bolded parts.
See how it is.
Sweet. Well, I mean, yeah.
You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.